Welcome to the Beyond Barriers podcast. When women lead, share performance and profits go up 50%. Results are more powerful when everyone is empowered. This is the insight that brought the four founders of Beyond Barriers together. We came from a diverse set of leadership backgrounds with a common goal: to close the gender gap at work and expand economic opportunities for everyone. Tune in each week as one of us interviews inspiring guests who share stories and cutting-edge strategies that will help you learn what helped them go further, faster.
You realize that was terrible and I'm still standing here. I may well get another shot, maybe not at this exact thing, but I'll be back up there doing this sort of thing again sometime. And I have survived. There is something to be said for being able to look back on a failure as a professional and have stood up. You draw on the counsel of others, the energy of others. Sometimes you need those people to lift you up and remind you so that you can get your resilience back. But truly, where resilience, I think, for any of us comes from is I lived through that failure. There was a period that flattened me, and I'm here to tell the tale. And because I did that once or twice or three times, I can do it again.
Welcome to today's episode, where we dive into the realms of leadership, resilience, and the transformative power of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. I'm your host, Brooke Skinner Ricketts, and we are about to embark on a journey that unravels the essence of authentic leadership and the secret to sustaining energy and resilience at the pinnacle of professional success with our remarkable guest and my friend, Cynthia Soledad. Cynthia leads Egon Zehnder's global diversity, equity, and inclusion practice, as well as being a partner in the marketing practice. Imagine navigating the vibrant world of marketing to the impactful domain of DEI, all while mastering the art of self-awareness and transitioning from being a doer to a pivotal enabler. Cynthia opens up about her personal and professional evolution, sharing stories that illuminate the path to developing an authentic personal brand and the courage it takes to face and grow from professional setbacks. Tune into this episode for an enriching experience that might just redefine your approach to leadership, resilience, and the power of diversity and inclusion. Don't miss out on these invaluable lessons from the top. Visit gobeyondbarriers.com, where you'll find show notes and links to all of the resources in this episode, including the best ways to get in touch with our special guest. Our conversation with Cynthia begins now.
So if you could start by introducing yourself and then just share a little bit about your story and maybe some of the most significant lessons that you've learned along the way.
I'm Cynthia Soledad. The role that I play today is actually multifaceted, but I am with a global executive search and leadership advisory firm called Egon Zehnder. We are literally everywhere you can think of in the world and cover all kinds of practices. But the role that I play here, as I said, is multifaceted. So a big part of my work and my identity here is that I've been leading our global diversity, equity, and inclusion practice for, 5 years now, which has gone quickly. And that work spans industries and geographies and also has an element of kind of building the internal capabilities and best practices of all of our consultants that work everywhere on everything to ensure they're all bringing inclusive best practices in all the work they do. And then I also work with senior executives and board directors in the world of consumer. And that is about finding, helping them on their career journeys. That can be placement, it can be leadership development. But before I joined Egon Zehnder, I was in the world of consumer. And so if it's not DEI related, it's something consumer related. And I particularly spend a lot of time, frankly, with marketers and general managers, because those were the functions that I was a part of. So yeah, it's many things, but what's been interesting along the journey is, of course, this is very different work being on the advisory side, having started my career as a marketer on the corporate side. So it's been an evolution and a lot of lessons learned along the way.
Yeah. So we met when you were an operator, you were a marketer, and yeah. I was your agency partner. We had a fun trip around the world together. And I think we were both at really different junctures of our careers. And I've experienced a similar thing going from corporate to entrepreneurship, right? So I would love to hear, what are the biggest lessons that you've taken away from making that leap? And are there things that you missed, or are there things that you relish about where you are now? I would love to just hear perspective there.
The first thing I would say is I cherish that I started in that place of being an operator and an operating executive to help in the work that I do today in counseling people along their journeys in the corporate world or out of the corporate world too. Like you, many people make transitions out of a traditional corporate executive role into something in entrepreneurship or something in consulting, something in advisory, et cetera. And having lived different places on that journey myself, I think we all collectively here at Aegon Zender, because actually everybody here made some sort of transition like that. And we bring people into Aegon Zender specifically that are making journeys because it informs how we connect with people on their journeys. So I cherish having these different chapters to draw upon and reflect on and have learned from. The other thing I would say is starting my life in the business world as a marketer was all about consumer insight. It was all about understanding people's lives and how they use them. Like when you and I went around the world and we were talking to people about how they cook and getting those windows into people's lives, whether it was through their stories or sometimes being in homes with them, you get a level of appreciation of all of the different facets of what make a human being tick. And frankly, that has served me incredibly well in the work that I do now, when I help people think about their careers and help people think about unlocking the potential inside themselves to do dramatically different things, harder things than they've done before, which is a lot of what we spend our time doing on the coaching and development side. So if it hadn't been for that foundation in consumer insight and consumer understanding, I think I would approach this work very differently. So I do appreciate all facets of that. And then what I would say is what I so love about the development work that we do, and I mean, career placement and development work that I do now, is the way in which you develop your skills now in this work is very much about understanding yourself better. Mm-hmm. And I feel lucky, I think a lot of us would say this, we feel lucky that by truly investing in yourself and your self-awareness and self-understanding and your growth, you are able to serve others better. You are better at this work, at this business, because you're growing yourself. And so the types of training and development work that I do now are truly therapeutic, and it makes you a better human, right? Like I hope that I am growing as a spouse and a mother and a sister and a daughter, as well as growing as a consultant and an advisor. It's pretty special.
That's so cool. That's been a lot of the work that we do with Beyond Barriers too, is helping people get in touch with what's their path, take the wheel of their career. What did that look like when you first started? And was it totally foreign? Was it like, I thought I was going to be doing one thing, but actually this is all about something different? Because I think people think about recruiting as more like transactional, unfortunately. Right. My experience of working with you and your firm is deeper than that, right? It's really human relationships. It's understanding the dynamics of the organization, et cetera. So yeah. Were there things that surprised you once you made the leap?
Yeah, there were. And I'll say too, because I do two different types of work, sure. Right? There's the work with the marketing and general management side, and then there's the DEI work. But let's start first with the marketing and general management, working with those executives and leading up to board. That was where I started here. And the interesting aha that I had is I first came in and I'd already lived a number of years trying to be an expert marketer.
Right.
And so then I felt like what I needed to be when I was here still was an expert marketer. But I was interviewing people and I was trying to understand what made their marketing great. And it was a pivot to recognize it's not that I need to be a great marketer anymore. Those people are the great marketers that I'm meeting and getting to know. I now need to be focusing on the person and be an expert on people, frankly, and leaders and what they as a leader have done to excel and to help their teams excel. And it was a mind shift because I kept thinking I needed to basically keep going back to the well on like, what's the latest marketing innovation that's happening and how's digital transformation? What are the new tech stack solutions? And totally not what I needed to be paying attention to. Oh. Then I would say the other big ahas that I've had related to the DEI work When I was on the corporate executive side, that's where I would say my passion for diversifying representation, building cultures of inclusion really started. I was living that. And I was sometimes seeing in the leadership teams that I was looking at in my own organization, that there was opportunity. And I was an employee resource group leader trying to drive change and trying to be the change I wanted to see. And at the time, not understanding why it was so hard to see results. You're a results-oriented person, you measure things. And by the time when I was looking over a five-year span with one organization and saying, gosh, over these 5 years, despite all of my efforts and the efforts of people that I was working with on exactly this goal, we were no more diverse than we were 5 years prior. And now that I am on this side of the work and partnering with the people and culture leaders in their organizations, now I better understand how much this is about systems change, right? It's much more than, I think a lot of employee resource group leaders are like, I'm passionate. And if I just exude my passion to enough people in an effective way, then change will come. And passion and will is actually not sufficient. You've got to dig into the systems and address some vulnerabilities, some weaknesses in this, because the systems are old. The systems were developed when the workforce was not as diverse as what we are today and what we want to be in the future. So those were some very big ahas. Systems change is still, by the way, very hard, but at least you know now where the effort, I understand better where the effort, a lot of effort needs to go.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's both are so important, both the individual and the system. And you're right that it's like A plus B equals C. And if you change one, then C changes. But if you change both, then that's when we see the real progress.
Yeah.
Tell me what, in your observation, what do you meet people and you're like, oh yeah, that's an amazing leader. Is there like a tip that you're like, or is there something that you look for? What's the thing that you look for where you're like, this one is going to go far?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I'm sure all of us have our little, have different tells. For me, there has to be a lot of focus on hearing how they excelled through others, right? How did they drive results through others? When I meet an executive that the way in which they tell their story, it seems as though they were the hero alone. It makes me question. To me, that's a little bit of a question on self-awareness and also what was the environment that they created for others. Now it's not just, sometimes it's just how people tell stories. And so you dig a little bit and you may find some amazing people work was done. But I will say, I get really excited and energized by leaders that I meet where off the bat, I can see and feel how authentic they are as a people leader, how much they've invested in building the right, excellent, diverse team around them and make the most of that. A sense of humility and learning in that, right? It's what allows them to bring that team around them and really listen to their counsel when needed. So a lot of this is about humility. I understand what I don't understand, but it's also critically important when you're talking about CEO level and board level, it's also being able to be decisive, like being able to keep the organization moving. So gathering counsel and taking the decision and being willing to learn when the decision didn't work. Yeah. And I would say too, there's a bit of a transition I think that people make. I also work with people that are still very much mid-career and growing in their careers. And it's really interesting to me to feel when somebody has made that pivot into a more senior level identity. There's almost this, sometimes I describe it as there's a lean back quality to them sharing their story because they are reflecting a lot more and they are selling less. So I've given that counsel to people a lot who are at that sort of VP level and they're looking to the future. And I encourage them to reflect and to share what they've learned, not just share what they did, if you will.
Yeah. No, one of the things that we walk through is we ask everybody to come up with a moniker that should be focused on not what you've done, but the value that you bring. So I'm the power generator, and my co-founder Monica is MacGyver for the marginalized. And try to come up with something really powerful and interesting. And that's a tough pivot, right? Because we get like on the way up, we get affirmed for what we do. And then you step into leadership and all of a sudden, like, actually, like that's such a small part of the job, right? So
Yes, exactly. That is the mindset shift, I think, when you move from the doer to the enabler of others. Even I got that counsel really early, actually, in my brand management days back at P&G, my first at the time of my first big promotion. And the president of our business, I'll name her actually, because I am just such an admirer still, but it was Melanie Healy, who at the time was president of the feminine care and health business unit. And she is the one who said to me, she said, first of all, congratulations, moving into people management is a big deal. And what you will learn is the more senior you get, the more time you spend on people. Almost all of your results are through enabling others. And so you're taking on your first people leadership responsibility. Just know that keep growing those skills, because by the time you're a president, it's all about the people.
Right. Yeah. But that's such great advice so early. Did you always know you were going to be a leader?
I would say I got a lot of positive feedback when I was like college age. And the career thing was like a twinkle somewhere in the back of my eye, probably. But I got a lot of positive feedback from, I was a leader of student organizations, and I had a job when I was in college, and I was working with a department director also. And between my peers that were giving me feedback and this department director that was giving me feedback, I started to get this inkling that I was good at leading people. and I would say P&G was probably a place where it's such a blessing to start a career there, actually, and places like P&G, where they really do invest in building your leadership capability from the beginning. So by the time I was at that stage, P&G would tell us all, we brought you here because you're leaders. So no one had any, you start there and you have zero work or almost zero work experience. So what are you leading? But they set that identity from the beginning and then encourage you to keep developing those skills as you go. And now that I'm in obviously this different place of counseling leaders, having a perspective on, I would say, the weight of leadership too. Right? You're early in your career, you're thinking about leadership, and it's more about getting the pats on the head and I don't know, the accolades and things like that. And then you really start to recognize it's a huge responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And some people are ready to take on that responsibility. Some people are more ready to take on that responsibility than others. Yeah, I have a slightly different view on it now than I did when I was young, but the red thread obviously flows through leadership all the way.
Tell me about what you've learned about, like, keys to building your personal brand, right? Whether it's your reputation or telling your own story. Obviously, you're talking to people who are like pitching themselves to you or sharing their story with you. And then you've done an amazing job. You have an incredible network. What do you think are the best practices there?
I do think it starts with knowing yourself, right? And a lot of times, especially when I'm working with executives that are in a moment of transition, and maybe it's an opportunity to build a different brand or to know what you want to capitalize from the brand that you have had, you do need to spend an appropriate amount of time really knowing yourself. What we want everyone to be able to do, what I seek to do for myself too, is be very authentic at presenting who you are and what you do and why you could be great at it. And to be able to present all of that authentically, you do need to spend that time reflecting. When was I most in flow? What are some of the things I am proudest of having delivered? How did I get there? What really energizes me versus what are the things that, yes, I've had to do them, but they have actually drained me of energy? And all of those different insights into yourself allow you to think about, when have I been at my best? When can I be at my best? And therefore, how can I present myself and put myself in situations where I will, as often as possible, be doing the things where I am at my best and where I can deliver my best? So what you're hearing is like a lot on authenticity, a lot on self-awareness. And then I think this, the storytelling piece of it, and I mentioned this before, this idea of being able to lean back as you share who you are, which is different from pitching yourself Sure. and selling who you are. And that also leads to a sense of authenticity.
It's such a balance too, because we work with so many like underrepresented leaders who are shy to share what they've done. And it's like the balance between, yes, I led this, right? As opposed to I had a really great team, like taking credit for the amazingness that you did lead, acknowledging. And so I think it gets tricky. And I think the other piece is what we see a lot is we end up the last person on our lists. And so actually taking that time to think about this stuff, like that's, I think that's a big piece of the value that especially senior leaders get out of the work that we're doing. I'm sure you see this too. I'm just so busy running this business that I never took a beat to think about what is my story? Like why, or why am I doing this work?
Aside
from that, I just nurtured it from the beginning.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think more people probably post-COVID, I think sometimes allow themselves more space in between things, or they'll recognize maybe I need a break from this so that I can take a pause. Not everyone has the luxury to be like, I can do a walkabout for 3 months and find myself. So you also do need to, we all need to find little ways to incorporate self-reflection into our regular busy lives somehow. Or if you're lucky enough to get to spend 3 months on a walkabout, that's amazing.
I know. You know, it's so funny. I had a coach who I worked with and he was like, you need to take a sabbatical. I'm like, great. Like 2 weeks, he's a year. And I was like, I just couldn't imagine. And I'm sure I knew at the time he was right, but I couldn't let that in. Like you said, it requires a lot of things to line up, right? In order to be able to do that. But I do think you're right that more of us are taking more reflective time post-COVID, which is great. It's good for business, good for everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about confidence and resiliency. Like I have never known you not to be a very confident person. Where did that come from? How did you build that? And how have you cultivated resilience over the course of your career?
Yeah. That's very kind of you, first of all. Thank you for feeling that way. Sometimes you come across as confident, but you're faking it until you're making it a little bit. And for me, where that came from is from the time I was a little kid, I've been performing. So it was musical performance. Usually it was piano recitals and violin recitals and singing and theater later on and things like that. And finding, so it happens that in those young experiences and then repeating them over and over again, you learn how to actually welcome nervousness, if you will, and not think because I feel these nerves, I should not go do this. I feel these nerves and I'm doing this anyway. Through those early performance experiences, not everything went well.
Right,
and you also that's back to this resilience idea. You realize that was terrible and I'm still standing here.
Yeah.
And I may well get another shot, maybe not at this exact thing, but I'll be back up there doing this sort of thing again sometime. And I have survived. So I'm talking about like childhood experiences, but meeting executives now along their journey, there is something to be said for being able to look back on a failure as a professional and have stood up through. And it is different when I'm meeting executives who just experienced their first professional failure. And if it's happened late and like late-ish in career, it's really hard. It flattens some people for a while because it's such a foreign experience to have something not succeed. And I have a ton of empathy for those people, for those moments. And you draw on the counsel of others, the energy of others. Sometimes you need those people to lift you up and remind you so that you can get your resilience back. But truly where resilience, I think for any of us comes from is I lived through that failure. There was a period that flattened me and I'm here to tell the tale. And because I did that once or twice or three times, I can do it again.
I was also a musical theater kid. And I always talk about it in terms of public speaking, but I didn't make the connection between resilience. I think you're totally right, because there's a lot of rejection, right? There's a lot of, this didn't go so well.
What if you knew exactly where to focus to go further, faster? Imagine having clarity on your strengths and barriers and the ability to take action and gain unstoppable momentum to deliver results in advance. Take the Beyond Barriers Momentum Metric quiz to get a personalized report on the 5 C's, core categories used to measure and accelerate success. Visit gobeyondbarriers.com/quiz to get your report today.
I want to double click on what you're talking about in terms of the experience of failure. And one of the things that we observe with more senior diverse talent, and this is with respect to DEI, is we're tired. We're just tired. And so one of the reasons, there are a lot of reasons why we don't have as much diversity as we want at the top. But one of the reasons is people are opting out because it's because they can, for one. But also I talked to a lot of people who are I probably have two more in me, but maybe really just one, just because I've been fighting this fight for so long. And it's not that it hasn't been rewarding in ways. So I just love to hear your perspective on that, knowing your sort of dual role, and also obviously the shifts that are happening in DEI in this country in general.
That last topic we could talk about all day, and it keeps shifting. So there's a lot to talk about there. We talk a lot about energy in the work that we do. And I think the thing to recognize is in any given role, you're working on this portfolio of things, and some of those things really give you energy and some of them really drain your energy always, right? And when we are giving counsel to executives on, okay, how are you going to sustain and stay resilient through challenges? You have to know what gives you energy and know what drains your energy. And both of those things are going to be your experience, but how can you maximize the energy givers, minimize if you can the energy drains, and even things like, okay, if I'm going to go into a meeting that I know is going to drain my energy, can I give myself the permission to then make sure I'm not headed straight into another meeting after that? And we don't always do that for ourselves. So we're going from one energy draining thing to another energy draining thing to another energy draining thing. And you think about, people will think about the physical side of it. They'll think, oh, I should eat, I should sleep, I should, but your brain actually needs rest and your heart needs rest. And so just knowing, okay, this 2-hour meeting is going to take a lot out of me. And after that, I'm not just headed straight into another meeting. It really can make a difference in your energy management and not put you in that risk of burnout. That's really what we're talking about here. When you have given everything and you're not getting enough back, that's burnout. Yeah. And we find ourselves then not able to take care of even the physical side anymore.
It's like so many things. I feel like this is a practice, because I've definitely got, even when we were working together a long time ago, I was just in the place where I was just saying yes to everything, because I thought it was all opportunity. And then I completely hit a wall, and it was 2 a.m. I was working on a deck, and I came in, and Tony, who you also know, was I've been waiting for you to do this. I knew that was coming. And that he was the one who said, when you say no to something, you're actually saying yes to something else. And that was such a profound thing for me. I never thought about it that way. And it really empowered, it empowered my no's, because it's no because, right? And if you talk about, is my because misplaced? Fine. Or I'm taking a beat so that I can show up fully for this next thing. And this is a big priority. So you handle the first time you do that, it's so hard. But then once you do it more, it gets easier.
Even starting with those small no's, like I said, just allowing yourself a pause after a meeting, for a lot of us, that is in and of itself a habit we haven't developed yet, to even say no to the subsequent meeting, which is just delaying it. Do that meeting tomorrow. Yeah. Much less the hard thing of saying no to a project or saying no to, I don't know, a role, things like that. But I think the other thing that comes to mind is some of the other things that are energy draining in small ways is this experience of, do I ever feel not fully valued, not fully seen? So when we talk about underrepresented minorities in the workplace, when you are feeling alone or you are feeling not fully heard, not fully seen, that is energy draining too. So the content of that meeting might be just fine, But the way that I feel as we are all sitting together in this is in and of itself energy draining. And that is where I think you're in. But can I create enough spaces and energy givers in my environment to keep going? And that's where I think some people, when they look at their environment, sometimes they're saying, this is not an environment where overall I'm getting enough energy.
Right.
So I need a different environment. And it's also a place where people who are doing inclusive culture work are saying, I notice what's going on in the environment. How can I help to change this environment so that people are getting more energy from being here?
Right.
I worry actually that I think hybrid work is a beautiful thing. I'm working from home today. You probably are too, right? It's a beautiful thing. What I sometimes have seen is sometimes people are retreating away from that bigger work environment because they worry about energy drain, which is a different dynamic to say I'm retreating from that and that's why I'm at home than to say, because it might just be actually maybe we need to acknowledge that environment needs to shift, or maybe I need to be in a different workplace entirely. But anyway, so it's just something that's been on my mind in this world of hybrid, as everybody is trying to figure out, should people come back to work? Should they not? They should go back if they get energy from it.
That's right. Yeah.
And we should be working really hard to make sure that the environment we create as people come back is energy giving, because right. Then people will want to be there.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I was talking to someone this morning who's writing their PhD about managing remotely, which I think is so interesting. And she was like cookies and beer are only going to get you. That's not why people are going to, right? So like and that's the systems change. I feel like that's at every level. We need to address this. How do we manage in a new way? How do we lead in a new way so that people do, like you're saying, like their cups get full and therefore they produce the results that we need them to produce. Okay. What do you have any daily habits or rituals that have really empowered or enabled you?
We're talking about taking these little mental breaks. I definitely do that. And the funny thing, everyone has their different way of doing a mental break. Yeah. And I probably need to shift this because I should probably meditate.
I will. Right?
Highly recommend that. I should do.
Like when I do it, I'm like, this is great. I should do this more often.
I know. My mental break is actually scrolling through news, but not scary news.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually, we're talking, I'm not the biggest follower of sports, but I do like to just read the headlines, for example. I don't remember all the statistics. But that's lighter. I scroll through what's going on in TV and film, these kinds of things. I read more about TV and film than I actually watch.
Yeah.
But it feeds my brain, actually, just knowing what's happening and what is the next creative thing that somebody is doing. I actually find that kind of refreshing.
Nice.
And the thing that, and this is lighter meditation, but we do try to practice this really often. When I remember to do it, I find it so helpful, but it actually is just to breathe, right? So before we're so back to back, taking like even 60 seconds, 120 seconds, and just being like, I am shifting gears. Breathe, pause, that sort of thing. What I have found in this work, being an advisor, is my day is so much more varied actually than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the pivots are big. What I'm working on one half hour versus the next half hour is dramatically different. I could be coaching somebody, like coming out of an intense, I don't know, hour and a half coaching session and then moving into an internal meeting or presenting a candidate profile to somebody for a search. So very different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just allowing myself 120 seconds at least to pivot. I have called on colleagues sometimes to say, I'm going to be coming out of something. And can you lead off in this next meeting? Because I am going to need a minute to regather myself. Things like that.
That's great. And people, I just want, like, for the record, people generally respond positively to this. Like people.
Oh,
So, because I think so many of us don't ask because it's like, well, they perceive that I can't hack it. But it's so important to show, and we learn this as parents, right? Put the oxygen mask on yourself first, which is We all try. But I think that's such an important thing also to model for others. This is like a thing that we do because we want everybody firing on as many cylinders as possible. So
Yeah. I think we do. The high achievers are that you carry that with you all the time, and showing elements of vulnerability are hard for a lot of people who are high achievers. But so often, I think people, your colleagues, want to be generous to you. Even just saying, could you lead off on this? People want to help other people, generally speaking, is what I have found. Just those, and my hope is that actually what the COVID years taught us is we are all human, and we have moments of vulnerability, and we need to be able to support each other, including in the workplace, because everybody's carrying a whole lot of stuff. So I think for a while it was like the lesson of the day during COVID years. And I want us to not forget all of those wonderful lessons that we learned, because that was a really beautiful one.
Mm-hmm. That's so valuable. I think especially for people leaders too, we talk a lot about this. You can actually give someone the opportunity to grow by asking them to do something for you, right?
Yes.
Like, yes, I'd love to. I've never let off a meeting. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes.
And then it's
true.
So to your point about those who can enable others are really the most powerful leaders. I think that's really true. Okay. Tell me a little bit about how you build strategic and powerful relationships. You're in a relationship business, but what are the hallmarks of that for you?
It is about being present. And that presence, certainly it's an in-the-moment presence. Whenever we have the opportunity to be together, phone call, Zoom, coffee, whatever it is. But I think the relationship builds by being able to be fully present for somebody. Most of the investments in relationships that I try to do, that we try to do here, are about being present to listen. Mm-hmm. So many of the people in the work that we do can feel lonely. Leadership roles are lonely at times, even for the sake of being able to, like, so much of what a senior leader needs to deal with has to stay confidential. And so who can you talk to and trust that they can be a vault for these things? And there are so many leaders that I know who are really, that's how they end up carrying so much, because they don't feel like it's appropriate, not just to be vulnerable, but I can't professionally, I can't share these things.
Yeah,
you can't know this about what's going on. And so being present, being available, being a listening ear and a sounding board, and that brings such value to people. Mm-hmm. We all are looking to be heard and seen and understood. And it is an incredible relationship builder. And then there is, what are the opportunities to be present when we're not together? Little things of, hey, I was thinking about you because I drove past that place where we had coffee. Right. I think you sent me a note like that.
I did. Yeah. That's great. I heard on the radio yesterday that it takes 8 minutes for someone to feel totally like they've gotten it all out. So if you have something like that, if you call a friend and you say, hey, do you have 8 minutes? That should cover it, which I think really great insight. But I think you're totally right about, we move so fast. And because of our video and hybrid relationships, there's so much about our days that are transactional, that those little lights are lifts, right? Like they change the way you think about the person.
Yeah. The other thing that we're, this hybrid world that we're thinking about, we all did, I think, learn so much about how we can be engaging and engage virtually. And we needed to only do it virtually for our safety for so long.
Right.
I feel now my personal yearning to be really physically spending time with people. And it's I don't know, this is so valuable to be able to also do that, because it allows us, the hybrid thing allows us to stay connected with people over greater distances when we can't physically see each other. But I guess I have started to worry about replacing in person fully with hybrid, because there is something also special about being able to be physically present with somebody. And even if we only did it once a year, some of my colleagues out in California, maybe I'm only seeing them physically once a year, but it's special. And I don't want us to collectively forget that.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. And it's tricky because we have this generation who's come in with totally remote, right? And so managing expectations, but also I feel like there are a lot of more junior folks who just haven't experienced the mentorship and the apprenticeship, right? That I wouldn't be on this path without some of the amazing people who literally pulled me along, took me places, right? And said, right, I'm going to set you up. And I had no idea what was going on, but they were setting me up. They were setting me up to see what this looks like. They were setting me up to engage in a different way. And I don't think that happens on Zoom.
Yes. Yeah. And we've talked a lot about energy. Again, you do sense people's energy when you're physically in the room together, right? Are they feeling anxious? Can I help to settle that energy? Are they feeling warm? And how does that benefit this interaction? Because I can feel that warmth, things like that. I still remember when we were first Zoom only, I felt like I was trying to beam warmth through through the screen. I was like, can you feel what I'm feeling?
That's awesome. I'm sure you did. Knowing you, I'm sure you did. We've covered so much and so much more than is even in the questions that we talk about. I want to do the lightning round questions, but before I do, I just want to ask if you want to share anything about like why you're at A Guns Under, what makes that a special place for you and why you're doing the work that you're doing, your why.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And actually I'll connect us back to that DEI topic that we put a pin in.
Yeah.
A huge part of the reason I came to A Guns Under, changed careers entirely, had to do with this passion and curiosity for diversifying leadership. And what does it take to do that? Because as I mentioned, I was like, didn't feel successful at my prior efforts. And when I was first exploring this possible career change, one of the people that I talked to, his name is Carl Alleman. He was at the time leading the Chicago office. So he was my point person. And I was talking to him about this, I don't know, calling or something. I just felt so strongly about the importance of diversifying leadership in organizations. And at the time he and I were having this conversation, I was deciding, would I continue down a path that I was on, which was to be a corporate executive, to be hopefully a chief marketing officer one day, or would I change careers to A Guns Under? And he said, if you are passionate about diversity and inclusion, you could think about this place, A Guns Under, your leadership advisors. This is a platform from which you can have that conversation with many organizations versus possibly hitting your head against the wall inside of one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's really powerful.
Really?
And it was a primary motivator for me making this change. And so fast forward, because now I'll be celebrating my 9-year anniversary here later on this year. And that is what I've been able to live, is to be able to have this conversation with so many more people. And not just a conversation like you and I are both interested in this topic, but it's moved to a place where, how can I help you in your organization achieve something and experience something different? And it's in all facets of the work that I do here. We do placements, where we talk about the importance of diverse slates. We talk about all range of different perspectives that could be additive to your team, to your organization. So it is not one or two different ways of thinking about diversity from an identity point of view. It is diversity of sector experience, right? Enabling that creative choice to bring in somebody I play somebody from Google at a consumer packaged goods company. These kinds of things. It's all range of think differently, you know, open up and be curious. So that's in the executive placement side. It's in the talent pipeline building side, right? Coaching and developing the kind of work that you're doing too at Beyond Barriers. I feel so connected to this work. And that's really why I'm so grateful to be here, is because of that thing that Carl told me. This is a platform and you can engage in a lot of different ways with a lot of different people on this topic. And I'm really grateful.
That's so cool.
And I will say, yes, the work continues to be challenging, right? The environment in which we are doing this work is hard. We are truly, I think, in 2023/4, experiencing in the United States a backlash against corporate DEI efforts, because I always feel like naysayers to this work are doing so out of fear. Fear for themselves, fear of change, it's fear-based. And so I try to be very, I think we collectively who do this work, try to be empathetic. We all experience fear and know that backs people up and that we're not our best selves when we are behaving from a place of fear. A lot of my focus now is about like, how do we take the fear rhetoric down a bit? How do we take to me, DEI work is about expanding opportunities. It's about helping people unlock their potential. It's so difficult to argue against. So if we can just adjust the rhetoric a little bit and get it back to that. But yeah, it is difficult because fear begets fear.
Right.
Totally. It's contagious. So the fact that some people are afraid of the work makes the people who are defending the work also afraid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think conflict mediators would tell you that the goal is to let's take down the temperature a little bit and try to see each other again so we can have this conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you're doing this work where you are. I'm so glad you made that leap. It sounds like you had some really good advisors there. Okay. I wish we weren't out of time because I feel like I could talk to you for the rest of the afternoon. So we'll have to do that another day, but let's do the lightning round questions. What book has greatly influenced you?
Ooh, can it be not work related?
Yeah, 100%.
Let's see. Gosh. Okay. This is going to sound really strange. I love the Harry Potter series. And I will tell you why I'm mentioning that specifically. There are many ways in which, first of all, I love the idea. I wish we could all see the magic in the world. And I have to say that this is quite on the personal front. Like this has been a connection point that I look back on really fondly with my kids. And being able to remember reading it out loud to them when they were little and trying all the voices and embracing magic in the world and all of that. I have to say, J.K. Rowling, the creativity that came out of that mind. So I celebrate creative minds too. And I just love that. So that might be an unexpected answer.
Love it. No, it's great. It's great. Everything's on the table. All right. Okay. And do you have a favorite inspiring quote or saying?
Never without looking them up because I can never rattle them off quickly. But I will say I've definitely rattled off or looked up and then recounted in presentations Maya Angelou. I find so much of what she wrote and said incredibly inspiring. So anything Maya Angelou.
So we talked about the moniker concept. Do you have a moniker or a word that you would use to describe yourself?
Authentic.
Awesome. And what's one change that you've implemented that has made your life better?
I went back to singing more. So it's always been a passion of mine, but I hadn't studied and done anything like regularly for quite some time, probably 10 years. And I went back to it last year.
That's awesome. Are you performing? Can I come see?
Yeah, you actually, I will let you know, I participate in adult recitals. And it's so fun because everybody who's performing at these adult recitals is like a total hobby, right? None of these people are, we're all like, it's like consultant by day, singer by night, like doctor by day, organist by night. But it's been so joyful to come back to it.
That's so cool. Okay. Then you should have, so the last song, one is my favorite. What is your power song? If you're walking up on stage or if you were walking out onto a field, what's your walk?
Let's see. Roar by Katy Perry. That's a fun one.
A good one. Yeah. All right. Cynthia, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for this time together and for you sharing your wisdom and insights, and I just really appreciate it. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you for asking and thank you for the work that you do. I'm so glad to see it blossoming. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, we're in the Mutual Admiration Society.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Beyond Barriers podcast. There are thousands of podcasts out there, and we are so grateful that you've chosen to listen to ours. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and tell a friend. Or share what you've learned on LinkedIn and tag us. We love hearing from our audience. Visit us at gobeyondbarriers.com, where you can subscribe and find show notes, links, and the best way to connect with our guests.